The Emir Osman Atalan, beloved of the Divine Mahdi, was riding at large. In response to the Mahdi's summons to Khartoum, he had been for many weeks on the march up from the Red Sea hills with his army. His warrior spirit chafed at the monotony and drudgery of the pace set by the great agglomeration of animals and people, the baggage train of camels and donkeys, the columns of slaves and servants, women and children were strung out over 20 leagues, and when they camped at night, it was like a city of tents and animal lines. Each of Osman's wives rode in a curtained litter on the back of her own camel and slept at night in her own commodious tent, attended by her slaves. In the van and in the rearguard rode the legions of the 40,000 fighting men he commanded. All the subservient tribes had massed to his scarlet and black banner, the Hamran, the Rufa of the hills, and the Hadendawa of the Red Sea littoral. These were the same warriors who, within the last few years, had annihilated 2 Egyptian armies. They had slaughtered Bakr Pasha's superior numbers at Tokar and El Teb, and left a wide road of bleached bones across the desert. When the wind came from the west, the inhabitants of Suakin, on the coast 20 miles away, could still smell the unburied dead. Many of the tribes under Osman Atalan had played a major role at the Battle of El Obaid, where General Hicks and his 7,000 had perished. They were the flower of the Dervish army. But in their multitudes they moved too slowly for a man such as Osman Atalan. He felt the call of the open desert and the silence of wild lands. He left the teeming legions to continue the march towards the city of infidels, while he and a small band of his most trusted Agajiers ranged out on their horses to indulge in the most dangerous sport known to the bravest of the tribes. As he reined in his steed on the crest of a long wooded ridge that overlooked the valley of the Atbara River, Osman Atalan cut a romantic heroic figure. He wore no turban, and his thick black hair was parted down the middle and drawn into a long plait that hung to the level of the blue silk sash that girt the waist of his ornately patched jibba. He held the scabbard of his broadsword clamped under his right knee against the saddle. The hilt was exquisitely fashioned from rhinoceros horn with a patina like amber, and the blade was inlaid with gold and silver. Under the fine loose cloth of his jibba, his body was lean and wiry, the muscles of his legs and arms like the woven sinews of a bowstring. When he swung down from the saddle, he stood tall beside his horse's head and stared out across the wide land below, searching for the first glimpse of the chase. His eyes were large and dark with the thick curling lashes of a beautiful woman, but his features seemed carved in old ivory, hard flesh and harder bone. He was a creature of the desert and the wild places, and there was no soft flesh on him. The inexorable sun had gilded but not blackened his skin. His Agajiers rode up behind him and dismounted. The title of honour was reserved for those warriors who hunted the most dangerous game on horseback, armed only with the broadsword. They were men carved from the same stone as their lord. They loosened the girths of their horses' saddles, then tethered the animals in the shade. They watered them, pouring from the water skins into the leather buckets, then spread mats of plaited palm fronds before them, and put down a small heap of durra meal for them to feed. They themselves did not drink or eat, for abstinence was part of their warrior tradition. If a man drinks copiously and often, he never learns to resist the sway of the sun and the sand, the old men said. While the horses rested, the Agajiers took down their swords and shields from where they were tied to the saddles. They sat in a small, companionable group in the sunlight and began to strop their blades on the cured giraffe hide of their shields. The hide of the giraffe was the toughest of all wild game, yet not so heavy as that of the buffalo or hippopotamus. The shields were round targes, unadorned with image or emblem, marked only by the blade of the enemy or the claw and fang of the chase. Blade honing was a pastime with which they filled their leisure, as much part of their life as breathing, more so than eating or drinking. "We will sight the quarry before noon," said Hassan ben Nada, who was the emir's lance-bearer. "Praise be the name of God. "In Allah's name," the others chorused softly. "I have never seen a spoor such as this lead bull leaves upon the earth," Hassan went on, speaking softly so that he did not offend his master or the jinns of the wilderness. "He is the bull of all bulls," they agreed. "There will be sport for a man before the sun sets." They glanced sideways at Osman Atalan, showing respect by not staring at him directly. He was deep in contemplation, squatting with his elbows on his knees and his smooth-shaven chin in the cup of his hands. There was silence except for the susurration of steel on leather. They paused in this endless activity, only to test an edge with a thumb. Each blade was about 3.5 feet in length, and double-edged. It was a replica of the broadswords of the Crusaders that centuries before had so impressed the Saracens before the walls of Acre and Jerusalem. The most treasured blades had been forged from the steel of Solingen and handed down from father to son. The marvellous temper of this metal imparted immense power to the blade, and it was capable of taking an edge like that of a surgeon's scalpel. The lightest stroke would split hide and hair, flesh and sinew to the deepest bone. A full stroke could divide an enemy at the waist, cutting him in two as effortlessly as though he were a ripe pomegranate. The scabbards were fashioned from two flat pieces of soft mimosa wood, held together and covered by the skin of an elephant's ear, dried hard and strong as iron. On the flat of the scabbard were two raised leather projections about 12 inches apart, which held the weapon securely under the horseman's thigh. Even at full gallop it would not flap and bounce in the ungainly manner of the swords of European cavalry. The Agagiers rested while the high sun moved through an arc of 3 fingers across the sky. Then Osman Atalan rose to his feet in a single flowing graceful movement. Without a word, the others rose also, went to their mounts and tightened the girths. They rode on down the slope of the valley through open savanna, in which the stately flat-topped acacia trees stood along the banks of the Atbara River. They dismounted beside one of the deep green pools. The elephant had been there before them. They had filled their bellies with water, then bathed riotously, hosing powerful jets from their trunks over themselves and the surrounding sandbanks. They had scooped up cartloads of thick black mud and plastered it on their heads and backs as protection against the sun and the swarms of biting insects. Then the 3 mighty grey beasts had wandered away along the bank, but the sand and mud they had left on the edges of the pool were so fresh that they were still damp. The Agagiers whispered excitedly together, pointing out the huge round tracks of the largest bull. Osman Atalan laid his war shield upon one of the padmarks. The circumference exceeded the giraffe-skin targe by the breadth of his finger. "In God's name," they murmured, "this is a mighty animal and worthy of our steel." "I have never seen a greater bull than this," said Hassan ben Nada. "He is the father of every elephant that has ever lived." They filled the water skins and let the horses drink again, then mounted up and followed the trail through the open acacia forest. The 3 bulls were moving head-on to the faint breeze, so that they would detect any danger ahead. The Agagiers moved up quietly and intently behind them. The lead bull had dropped a pile of bright yellow dung in a clearing. It was stringy with chewed bark that he had stripped from the acacias, and lumpy with the stones of the doom palm tree. A swarm of bright butterflies hovered over it. The scent was so strong that one horse snorted nervously. His rider calmed him with a reassuring touch on his neck. They rode on, with Osman Atalan a length ahead. The trail was plain to see even from the distance of 100 paces or more, for the bulls had ripped long slabs of bark from the boles of the acacias. The pale wounds were so raw and recent that they glistened with the running sap, which would dry into sticky black lumps of the precious gum arabic. Emir Osman rose high in the stirrups and shaded his eyes to gaze forward. Almost 1/2 mile ahead, the shaggy head of a tall doom palm rose above the lesser trees of the savannah. Although the breeze was so faint as to be barely palpable, the distant palm top was whipping from side to side as though it were being battered by a hurricane. He looked back at his companions and nodded. They smiled, because they understood what they were witnessing. One of the bulls had placed his forehead against the bottle-shaped trunk of the palm and was shaking it with all his massive strength as though it were a sapling. This brought the ripe doom nuts showering down on his head. They reined in their steeds to a walk. The horses had scented the chase and were sweating and trembling with fear and excitement, for they knew what would happen next. Abruptly, Osman laid his hand on his mount's withers. She was a creamy, honey-coloured mare. She lifted her lovely Arabian head and flared the wide nostrils that were the mark of her breed, but stopped obediently. Her name was Hulu Maya, sweet water, the most precious substance in this thirsty land. She was 6 years old and in her prime, swift as an oryx and as gentle as a kitten, but with the heart of a lioness. In the clamour of battle and the fury of the chase, she never faltered. Like her rider, she stared ahead for the first glimpse of their quarry. Suddenly, there he was, one of the lesser bulls standing separated from his companions, dozing under the spreading branches of a mimosa tree. The dappled shadows blurred his outline. Osman gestured with his right hand, and they went forward, the horses stepping warily as though they expected a cobra to rear up under their hooves. Almost imperceptibly, the shapes of the other two beasts emerged from among the trees. One, tormented by the stinging flies, shook his head so violently that his ears clapped thunderously against his shoulders. His tusks gleamed dully in the shade, darkened by sap and vegetable juices to the colour of a meerschaum pipe stained by tobacco smoke. The curved and tapered pillars of ivory were so vast that the Agagiers grunted with satisfaction and touched the hilts of their broadswords. The third bull was almost hidden by a patch of kita thornbush. From this angle it was impossible to judge how his tusks compared with those of his companions. Now that Osman Atalan had placed the position of each bull, he could plan his attack on them. First they must deal with the nearest, for if they passed across his wind, their scent would be carried to him. The smell of man and horse would send him away at a rush, trumpeting the alarm to the others, and only hard riding would bring them up to the herd again. In a whisper that was barely a movement of his lips, but with expressive gestures of the hands, Osman Atalan gave his commands to the Agagiers. From long experience, each man knew what was expected of him. The bull under the mimosa tree was angled half away from them, so when Osman led them forward again, he circled out to the right, then came in more directly from behind. The eyesight of the elephant is poor when compared with that of other creatures of the wild, such as the baboon and the vulture, but if it has difficulty distinguishing shape, it picks up movement readily enough. Osman dared not approach closer while he was mounted. He slipped from the saddle and girded up the hem of his jiba with the blue sash, leaving his legs covered only with baggy breeches. He tightened the straps of his sandals, then drew his broadsword. Instinctively, he tried the edge and sucked the drop of blood that welled from the ball of his thumb. He tossed Sweetwater's reins to Hassan and started towards the massive grey shape in the shade of the mimosa tree. The bull seemed as majestic as a three-decked man-o'-war. It seemed impossible that such a mighty beast could fall to the puny blade. Osman stepped lithely and lightly with the grace of a dancer, carrying the sword in his right hand. However, he had bound the first hand's breadth of the blade above the cruciform cross-piece of the hilt with a strip of skin from the ear of a freshly killed elephant. Now that this had dried and cured, it formed a double grip for his left hand. As he approached, the bull heard the soft rumbling of its belly. The animal was sharing its contentment and pleasure with the rest of the herd, who were also dozing in the somnolent midday heat nearby. The bull was swaying gently and swishing lazily at the flies with his stubby tail. The wiry bunch of hair at the end was almost worn away with age. The gigantic stained tusks were so long and thick that the bull was resting the blunt tips on the hard-baked earth. His weathered corrugated trunk hung slackly between the ivory shafts. He was fondling the sun-dried, bleached femur bone of a long-dead buffalo with the tip, rolling it against his front foot, then lifting it to his lips as if to taste it, rubbing it between the fleshy, finger-like projections on each side of the nostril openings, much as an ancient Coptic priest might play with his beads as he sat dreaming in the sun. Osman changed his grip, two-handed now for the fatal stroke, and moved down the bull's flank, close enough to touch him with the point of the sword. The riven grey hide hung down in bunches around the bull's knees, and in loose flaps under the sagging belly, like the clothing of an old man, too baggy for his wizened body. His agajies watched him with awe and admiration. A lesser warrior would have chosen to hamstring his quarry approaching the unsuspecting beast from behind, and with swift double strokes severing the main tendons and arteries in the back of the legs above the huge splayed feet. That injury would allow the hunter to escape, but cripple and anchor the bull until the severed arteries had drained the life from him, a slow death that might take up to an hour. However, to attempt the head-on approach, as their emir was doing, increased the danger 100-fold. Osman was now well within the arc of the trunk, which was capable of delivering a blow that would shatter every bone in his body. Those huge ears picked up the smallest sound, even a carefully controlled breath, and at such close quarters the roomy little eyes would detect the slightest movement. Osman Atalan stood in the bull's shadow and looked up at one of those eyes. It seemed much too small for the huge grey head, and was almost completely screened by the thick fringe of colourless lashes as the bull blinked sleepily. The dangling trunk was also shielded by the thick yellow tusks. Osman had to entice the bull into extending it towards him. Any untoward movement, any incongruous sound would trigger a devastating response. He would be clubbed down by a blow from the trunk, or trampled under the pads of those great feet, or transfixed by an ivory tusk, then knelt upon and ground to bloody paste under the bulging bone of the bull's forehead. Osman twisted the blade gently between his fists, and with the polished metal picked up one of the stray sunbeams that pierced the leafy canopy above his head. He played the reflected sunbeam onto the bull's gently flapping ear, then directed it forward gradually, until it shot a tiny diamond wedge of light into the bull's half-closed eye. The elephant opened his eye fully, and it glittered as it sought out the source of this mild annoyance. He detected no movement other than the trembling spot of sunlight, and reached out his trunk towards it, not alarmed but mildly curious. There was no need for Osman to adjust his double grip on the hilt. The blade described a glittering sweep in the air, fast as the stoop of the hunting peregrine. There was no bone in the trunk to turn the blow, so the silver blade sliced cleanly through it and half dropped to the ground. The elephant reeled back from the shock and agony. Osman jumped back at the same instant, and the bull spotted the movement and tried to lash out at it. But his trunk lay on the earth, and as the stump swung in an arc towards Osman, the blood hosed from the open arteries and sprayed in a crimson jet that soaked his jibba. Then the bull lifted the stump of his amputated trunk and trumpeted in mortal anguish, his blood spraying back over his head and into his eyes. He charged into the forest, shattering the trees and thorn bushes that blocked his path. Startled from the brink of sleep by his trumpeting screams, the other bulls fled with him. Hassan ben Nada spurred forward with sweet water on the rein. Osman snatched the lock of her long, silky mane and leapt into the saddle without losing his grip on the hilt of his broadsword. "Let the first bull run!" he cried. The pumping of the massive heart would drive the blood more swiftly out of the open arteries. The bull would weaken and go down within a mile. They would return for him later. Without checking his horse, Osman passed the spot where the dying animal had turned sharply aside. He rose in the stirrups more clearly to descry the trails of the two unwounded bulls. He followed them until they reached the first hills of the river valley, where they parted company. One bull turned southwards and stormed away through the forest, while the other clambered straight up the rocky slope. There was no time to study the spoor and decide which was the larger animal, so Osman made an arbitrary choice. He signalled with his raised sword, and the agajies separated smoothly into two bands, The first party rode on up the escarpment after one animal, and Osman led the rest after the other. The dust of its flight hung in the still hot air, so there was no need to slow down to read the spoor. Sweetwater flew on for another mile until 400 paces ahead, Osman made out the dark hump of the bull's back, crashing through the grey kitar thorn scrub, like a whale breaching in a turbulent sea. Now that he had the chase in sight, Osman slowed Sweetwater to an easy canter to save her strength for the final desperate encounter. Even at this pace, they gained steadily on the bull. Soon the gravel and small pebbles thrown up by the bull's great pads rattled against his shield and stung his cheeks. He slitted his eyes and rode in still closer until the bull sensed his presence and turned upon them with speed and nimbleness astonishing in such a massive beast. The horsemen scattered before his charge, but one of the Agajis was not quick enough. The bull reached out with his trunk and at full gallop plucked him from the saddle. The broadsword with which he might have defended himself spun from his grip, throwing bright reflections of sunlight before it pegged into the hard earth and oscillated like a metronome. The bull turned aside and, with his trunk coiled round the Agajie's neck, swung the man against the trunk of a duum palm with such force that his head was torn from his body, then knelt over the corpse and gored it with his tusks, driving the points through and through again. Osman turned Sweetwater back, and although she tossed her long mane with terror, she responded to the pressure of his knees and his touch upon the reins. He rode her in directly across the bull's line of sight, and shouted a challenge to attract the animal's full attention. "Ha! Ha!" he cried. "Come, thou spawn of Satan! Follow me, O beast of the infernal world!" The bull leapt up with the corpse dangling from one of his tusks. He shook his head, and the dead man was hurled aside. Then he charged after Osman, squealing with rage, shaking his great head so that the ears flapped and volleyed like the mainsail of a ship of the line taken all aback. Sweetwater ran like a startled hare, carrying Osman swiftly away before the charge, but Osman slowed her with a lover's touch on the bit. Though he lay forward over her neck, he was looking back under his arm. "Gently, my sweetest heart," he moderated her speed. "We must tease the brute now." The bull realized he was gaining, and thundered after them like a squadron of heavy cavalry. He thrust his head forward and reached out with his trunk, but the mare ran like a swallow skimming the surface of a lake to drink in flight. Osman kept her streaming tail an arm's length ahead of the tip of the waving trunk. The bull forced himself to even greater speed, but as he was about to snatch down the horse and her rider, Osman pushed her gently so that she ran tantalizingly ahead, just beyond the bull's reach. Osman spoke softly into the ear, and she turned it back to listen to his voice. "Yes, my lovely, they are coming on." Through the dust of the bull's run, he could make out the shapes of the Agajis closing in. Osman was offering himself and his mount like the cape to the bull, giving his men the opportunity to ride in and deliver the lethal strokes. The elephant was so absorbed with the horseman in front of him that he was unaware of the men who rode up under his outthrust tail. Osman watched Hassan ben Nada leap lightly from the saddle to the ground right at the bull's pounding heels. His outrider seized the loose reins and held the head for the instant that Hassan needed. As he touched the earth, he used the impetus of his horse's gallop to hurl himself forward. As the bull placed his full weight on the nearest leg, the rope of the tendon bulged tightly under the thick grey hide. Hassan slashed his blade across the back of the fetlock, a hand span above the point where the straining tendon was attached to the joint. The gleaming steel edge cut down to the bone, and the main tendon parted with a rubbery snap that, even in the uproar of the chase, carried clearly to Osman's ear. In the same instant, Hassan ben Nada snatched back the reins from his outrider and leapt into the saddle. His horse plunged into full gallop once more. It was a marvellous feat of horsemanship. With three lunges, his horse had carried him clear of the bull's tusks and trunk. The bull lifted his wounded leg from the earth and swung it forward to take the next pace. But as his full weight came down onto the pad, the leg buckled and the fetlock joint gave way. An elephant is unable to run on three legs, as other four-legged creatures can, so he was instantly crippled and anchored to the spot. Squealing with agony and rage, he groped for his tormentor. Osman spun sweet water about, and with his heels drove her back almost under the outstretched trunk, shouting at the bull to keep his attention riveted, turning just out of reach. The bull tried to chase him, but stumbled heavily and almost went down as the crippled leg gave way under his weight. In the meantime, Hassan had circled back, and, again undetected by the struggling animal, rode in now under his tail. He jumped down once more, and then, to demonstrate his courage, let his steel run on, as he stood alone at the bull's heel. He waited an instant for the bull's full weight to come down on its uninjured leg, and when the tendon stood out proud beneath the skin, he severed it with the skill of a surgeon. Both of the bull's back legs gave way under him, and he sank helplessly onto his haunches, screaming his anguish to the pitiless sky and the triumphant African sun. Hassan ben Nada turned his back on the struggling animal and walked away unhurriedly. Osman jumped down from Sweetwater and embraced him. "Ridden like a man and killed like a prince," he laughed. "This very day you and I shall take the oath and eat the salt of brotherhood together." "You do me too much honour," Hassan whispered, and fell to his knees in homage, "for I am your slave and your child, and you are my master and my father." They rested the horses in the shade and watered them from the skins while they watched the last struggles of their quarry. The blood spurted from the gaping arteries in the back of the bull's legs in rhythm with the pulse of his heart. The earth beneath his pads dissolved into a bath of mud and blood until his crippled legs slipped and slid as he shifted his weight. It did not take long. The bright crimson flow shriveled, and the lassitude of approaching death settled over him. At last the air rushed out of his lungs in a long, hollow groan, and he toppled onto his side, striking the earth with a sound that echoed off the hills. 5 days from now I will send you back here with 50 men, Hassan ben Nada, to bring in these tusks." Osman stroked one of the huge ivory shafts that thrust up into the air higher than his head. It would take that long for the cartilage that held them in the bony sockets of the skull to soften with decay, so that the great shafts could be drawn out undamaged by careless axe strokes. They mounted and rode easily back along their own spoor to find the first beast that Osman had attacked. By this time he too would have bled to death from the terrible wound. It would be easy to track him down to the spot where he had fallen, for he must have left a river of blood for them to follow. They had not gone half a league before Osman held up a hand to halt them and cocked his head, listening. The sound that had alerted him came again from across the rocky ridge over which the other band of Agajirs had pursued the third bull. The intervening hills must have damped down the echoes, so that they had not heard them before. The sound was unmistakable to these experienced hunters. It was the sound of an angry elephant, one that was neither crippled nor weakened by its wounds. "Al-Nur has failed to kill cleanly," said Osman. "We must go to his aid." He led them up the slope at a gallop, and as they crossed the ridge the sounds of conflict were loud and close. Osman rode towards them and found a dead horse lying where it had been struck down, its spine shattered by a blow from the bull's trunk. The Agajie had died upon its back. They rode past them without drawing rein, and found 2 more dead men. At a glance, Osman read the signs. One had been unhorsed in the face of the charging animal. The hooked, red-tipped thorns of the kita had plucked him from the saddle as he had tried to escape the bull's charge. The other dead man was his blood brother, and he had turned back to save him. As they had lived, so they died. Their blood mingled, and their broken bodies entwined. Their horses had run free. The elephant trumpeted again. The sound was closer now, and sharper. It rang out from a forest of kitar not far ahead. They slammed their heels into the flanks of their mounts and galloped towards the kitar. As they approached, a rider broke at full gallop from out of the thorn barrier into the open. It was Al-Nur on his grey, which was in the extremes of terror and exhaustion. Al-Nur was almost naked. His jibba had been ripped from his body by the thorns, and his skin was lacerated as though it had been clawed by a wild beast. The grey was staggering, throwing out its hooves sloppily at each stride, and was too far gone to see and avoid the antbear burrow in its path. It stumbled and almost went down, throwing Alnur over its head, then ran on, leaving its rider stunned in the track of the great bull elephant that burst out of the thorn forest behind them. This was the patriarch bull, whose tracks had first astounded them. There was blood on one back leg, but too high and too far forward to have struck the tendon. Alnur had inflicted a flesh wound that did not slow or impede the animal. As he came on, he held his head up high to keep his long tusks clear of the thorn scrub and stony earth. They extended from his lip twice as far as a tall man could reach, with both arms spread wide. They were as thick as a woman's thigh, with almost no taper from tip to lip. 10 cantars aside! Hassan shouted, amazed. This was a legendary animal, with almost 200 pounds of ivory curving out on each side of his great grey head. Still dazed, Alnur rose shakily to his feet and stood swaying drunkenly, with blood and dust coating his face. His back was turned to the charging bull, and he had lost his sword. The bull saw him, squealed again, and rolled his trunk back against his chest. Alnur turned. When he saw death descending upon him, he raised his right hand, index finger extending as a sign that he died in Islam, and cried, "God is great!" It was his moment of acceptance. He stood without fear to meet it. "For me and for Allah," Osman called to his mare, and Sweetwater responded with her last reserves of strength and speed. She dashed in under the vaulted arch of tusks, Osman flat on her neck. The bull's trunk was rolled. There was no target for his blade. He could only hope to draw the charge off the man. The bull's gaze was so focused on Alnur that he was unaware of the horse and rider coming in from the flank until they flashed past, so close that Osman's shoulder glanced off one of the tusks. Then they were gone, like the darting flight of a sunbird. The bull wheeled aside, forsaking the standing man and following the more compelling focus of his rage. He charged after the horse. "O beloved of Allah!" Alnur shouted his gratitude after the emir who had saved him. "May God forgive all your sins!" Osman smiled grimly as the words floated to him above the murderous trumpeting, the clash of hoofs and bursting thorn scrub. "God grant me a few more sins before I die!" he shouted back and led the bull away. Hassan and the other Agajirs rode in his wake, shouting and whistling to attract the bull's attention. But he held on after Sweetwater. The mare had run hard, but she was not yet spent. Osman looked back under his arm and saw that the bull was coming on apace, so swiftly that neither Hassan nor any other could get into position to attack his vulnerable back legs. He looked ahead and saw that he was being driven into a trap. Sweetwater was running into a narrow open lead between dense stands of the kitar thorn, but her path was blocked by a solid wall of thorn. Osman felt her check under him. Then she turned her head, gazed back at her beloved rider as if seeking guidance, and rolled her eyes until the red linings showed, white froth splattered from the corners of her mouth. Then horse and rider ran into the kitar, which closed round them in a green wave. The thorns hooked into hide and cloth like the eagle's talons, and almost at once Sweetwater's graceful run was transformed into the struggles of a creature caught in quicksand. The bull thundered down upon them, its mighty progress unchecked by the kitar. "Come, then, and let us make an end," Osman called the challenge, dropped the reins and kicked his feet out of the stirrups. He stood up, tall upon the saddle, facing back over Sweetwater's rump, his eyes on the level of the bull's. Man and beast confronted each other over a rapidly dwindling gap. "Take us, if you are able," Osman called to the bull, knowing how the sound of his voice would infuriate the animal. The bull flattened his ears against the sides of his skull and rolled the tips in rage and aggression. Then he did what Osman had been waiting for. He unrolled his trunk and reached out to seize the man and lift him high off the back of his horse. Balancing to Sweetwater's violent lunges and struggles, Osman held the long blade poised, and as the serrated grey trunk was about to close round his body, he struck. The steel wickered in flight and dissolved into a silver blur of light. The stroke was full and seemed to meet no resistance. The steel sliced through the hide, flesh and sinews as though they were mist. It severed the trunk close to the lip as smoothly as the guillotine blade takes off a condemned man's head. For an instant there was no blood, just the sheen of freshly exposed flesh and the gleam of nerve ends and white tendons. Then the blood burst forth, engulfing the great grey head in a crimson cloud as the arteries erupted. The bull screamed again, but now in agony and dismay. Then he lurched to one side as he lost his balance and sense of direction. Osman dropped back into the saddle and guided Sweetwater with his knees, steering her out of the arc of the bull's blood-dimmed eyesight. The animal blundered in a wide, uncertain circle as Hassan rode in behind him to make the cut in the back of his left leg. Then he jumped back into the saddle, leaving the bull anchored by his crippled leg. Osman slipped down from Sweetwater's back, and with another stroke of his blade, cut through the other hamstring. The heart blood pumped from the terrible wounds on his back legs and trunk, but the bull remained upright for as long as a mullah might take to recite a single surah of the Quran. Osman Atalan and his agajiers dismounted and stood at their horses' heads to watch his death throes and pray for him, praising his might and courage. When at last he fell with a crash to the stony earth, Osman cried, "Allah is Almighty! Infinite is the glory of God!"